It's the Merry Christmas, everyone. Welcome to This Week in Mormons. Thanks for sitting down with us for a little bit as we go over Mormon news and minutia, shall we say, right here before Christmas time. Ha-ha!
This is our Christmas episode.
This is Christmas time. I think this will be the last, you know, episode for the year. We're going to...
Well, so this is Christmas. And what have we done?
This is Christmas.
Look, Michael. Look what the Christmas has done to me.
You can't just comb that out and reset it? Come on. How you doing, dude?
Oh, man. I'm doing fine. It's a busy time of year. It's a busy place, busy things.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hanging in there, working on my family all they're on a cruise. Like they went on a cruise for Christmas.
I feel like they did this to you last year too.
Not as bad. They're gone for Christmas. Like I am here with my wife in Hamilton, Missouri.
Yes.
For Christmas.
Yes.
They're not here.
Well, at least you have your run of the town then. I mean, that's good.
Yeah, no, it gets pretty dry down here around Christmas time. And so we will be making our own traditions.
Yes.
We made tamales the other night, as any good Swedish family would. You make tamales for Christmas. They were surprisingly delicious.
Tamales are awesome, man.
I'm not a tamale fan traditionally because I never was confident that I had gotten all the corn husk off before I'd start eating.
Sure, that's totally not
young
understandable.
And very hungry in the early days.
Sure,
and
of course.
That meal on the inside is the same color, texture as the corn. You, how can you know? And I had bad experiences with them in my youth. And so circling back as an adult, a lot of sour cream and salsa, but they are delicious.
My hometown actually has a tamale fest every December. So you missed out not living there during that time. Tamale Fest is a big deal. It's a good time.
You had a lot of those big deals that weren't actually big deals.
No, Tamale Fest pulls people from kilometers away.
The best thing about Placentia,
yeah, that's
still to this day, is the Foster Freeze, and you get a root beer freeze when you go there.
You will not believe this. I heard the Foster's Freeze finally closed.
No.
Now, folks, many of you out west might be familiar with the Foster's Freeze brand. Some of them are roped in with like El Pollo Locos nowadays, if you're out in the west. Anyway,
they're the best.
Foster's Freeze had random burgers, and they had, you know, dipped ice cream cones and stuff.
I only
like
knew
that.
Of one soft item serve on their menu, which was the root beer freeze.
And that was good, too. The point is, this was a standalone Foster's Freeze. It had been there my entire life around the corner from my house. Ever since I was
upwards
a kid, it's been there.
17 years.
Yeah. I never knew how it stayed open. No, we never went there. I don't know who went there. My guess is
I went there
they,
9 times in the 6 months I lived with you.
I know you did, but... Most people. I'm actually sad it's gone. I felt like it was impervious to the economy. I assumed the owners had long since paid off the actual building, and they were basically just paying utilities every month. And by selling 5 hamburgers a month, that covered it. But now it's gone. Another piece of my childhood washed away in the wake of the Trump administration.
Thanks a lot, Trump.
If only they had hung on until the new tax plan set in stone. They would have so much more money to invest and hire more people. It's a shame.
That would have fixed it.
Okay, I don't want to get too political, but you, as an entrepreneur,
yeah,
this whole tax thing has been pretty, in the U.S. anyway, has been pretty pretty quick, hard to digest everything. But so,
sure.
How do you feel about it as a business owner?
I have no idea. I have not taken the time to read nor understand the coming tax bill.
Neither have the Republicans who voted on it. So everyone's good then.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. And the Democrat, nobody got to read it. It's nowhere to be seen.
But it's like
they have a lot of conjecture around. Like I've seen articles for every way. Apparently, everybody is getting a tax cut, and everybody is getting the shaft, depending on who you talk to.
It depends on what it is. They're changing a lot of the credits. The funny thing is, many years down the line, we all get shafted. So apparently, people will get a boon for like 5 or 6 years, and then everyone goes negative in like 2026.
I just feel like we've been around this too long, right? No cuts stay very long, and no big jumps stay. I mean, it's why we have an 8-year cycle of Republicans and Democrats. Literally, we still are practicing the same policy we were 50 years ago.
Well, the last time the U.S. redid taxes was in the 80s.
No, Bush had a big tax cut that he put in.
That's true. I'm sorry. Well, Bush had a big tax cut, but the last time they did a full revision of the whole tax code was in the 80s, and that's what this is. But you are correct about Bush. Yes, sir.
I know.
Well played.
And Clinton actually had some stuff that he was working through.
Clinton got to live the dream through a surplus. It was a good... The 90s were the time, man.
Well, who else was there? Rilo Kiley?
No, Rilo Kiley was the 2000s. The aughts. Oh, okay. The aughts.
How are you, Jeff? How have you been?
Fine. I'm fine. We're home
good
for
chat.
We are here for Christmas in D.C. this year. We haven't been in D.C. for many, many years, but with the newborn, we're not
you
traveling.
Two are staying home to make your own traditions.
Yep. Yep, we're hanging out here, so this is actually
what
the
traditions
first...
will you do? You don't have any heritage to celebrate.
Not really, no. I mean, just there's that Welshness and some of the Danish stuff.
Will you do anything, or you just open presents and lie to your kids about Santa?
Usually. remind me about lying. Sorry, quick digression. I'm in church a couple of weeks ago, and a woman starts talking about how Santa's like not real from the pulpit during her talk, and I'm like, lady. There's kids in the audience. It's a sacrament.
It's K. Eit Ray here, A.
Yeah. I'm like, this is not gospel doctrine. You're ruining lives. You are literally ruining lives right
was
now.
Guy, was could Guy understand? He wasn't listening.
No, Guy didn't care. He was playing with his trucks.
Yeah.
Trucks and cars. Trucks, cars, trucks and cars. That's his life. My son's life is nothing but vehicles. That is all that matters to him. He sees
race car drivers and three-year-olds.
Every morning, we live across the street from a middle school, and every morning he goes and pulls a stool up to the window and sits there and watches the school buses line up and gets so excited about it. He just loves
it. He seems like a nice guy.
He's a good kid. Very happy with
Sounds
him.
Like very animated.
So he is very animated, even though he never is when we talk with you on the video chat.
That guy hasn't said two words
to me. He completely shuts
Jeff
down.
Jeff swears he can form sentences. I have yet to see it.
It's pretty funny because my son's a pretty like goofball, funny kid, but he just shuts down around Al, which is understandable because Al's intimidating and mean to children.
I have a beard.
Yeah.
I'm the kind of guy that your parents tell you not to go to a theater with.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, we're sticking around here for the first time since we got married. I'm a little sad. My brother's family was going to be coming out, but their kid got sick and we couldn't risk it around the 5-week old baby.
Measles, mumps, or rubella, which one?
Yeah. That's not important, but we had to revise. So sadly they're just not coming out because we didn't want to risk the kid getting sick. So my sister will still get here this weekend. So someone will be here. It was going to be kind of like us hosting Christmas, the whole gang, all my two thirds of my siblings here.
It was going to be like an Always Sunny in Philadelphia episode. The gang got together for Christmas.
Yeah. So now it'll be my sister, which is great. A little bit different, but we'll have a good time. And that's really all we have planned. I'm just chilling, taking some time off because I can. I'm going to see Star Wars probably not till next week. And that's my life, man. Just working, vacationing.
How did this happen to you?
Sometimes
do you ever ask yourself that?
Sometimes I hide in the basement.
Did you get this lucky?
And we finally received a new calling in our ward, but I cannot tell you what it is, for we will not be sustained for a few more weeks. So I'm just going to leave you all
a
mystery.
Give me one hint, like a clue.
I'll give people a clue. It's something I've done before-ish.
Elder Scorn President, ish. For sure.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, no, it's done.
Until the time.
Either that or ward mission leader. Those are the only two callings you've had before.
The problem is I've had many callings before. I've also been a ward clerk.
No, you're just trying to dilute the waters now. I for sure guessed it.
Fellowshipping
I can see it in the corner of my eye.
Now, I've been the activities committee chair. We could bring back the activities committee, which everyone knows is the best idea that the church is not currently embracing.
I think if I was a bishop, I'd just do it. I think most bishops do just
I've known many that do, especially in singles wards. They just do them.
Like, yeah, we're calling it the Mactivities Committee now. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, did you have does your ward do a Christmas party out there in Hamilton?
I have no idea. I don't know.
So you're not...
I don't participate. I find myself doing less and less of the ward activities. Here's my thinking on this. When we all went to Salt Lake City as pioneers,
sure.
Brigham Young had a desert and a lot of people that he needed to occupy, so he came up with all kinds of stuff. They were going to church twice on Sunday. They were doing mutual. They had dances. They had plays he was putting on. He had all this stuff they were filling time with. And these vestiges of the olden days have stayed through till today. where we're still trying to like fill most of our people's time. And I'm saying, I'm here saying, I think I'm actually good with, like, I'll go to church on Sunday. And then, like, I kind of like home teaching and visiting teaching, but, like, most of the other stuff I'm going to try not to do. I'm going to go and leaven the earth with my leaven. I'll salt with the savor and bring others to Christ instead of all of us just getting together to hang out.
You seem like such a gregarious.
I'll let you know if I'm inactive in 2 years. We'll see how this test works.
Your wife's going to be like, what did I get into? What did I sign myself up for?
No, we go to some stuff, but I'm actually really trying to like, really trying to question, you know, like all the goofy stuff that you know, where it's normally it's like kind of like just filler. We're getting together all the time. We're hanging out every night and doing stuff. And I'm like, what if I hung out with friends that I liked from church and we hung out together instead of going to this weird FHE thing that you put together?
That's fair. I'm feeling very guilty because our new ward that we've been in now for, what, 2.5 months or so has been very welcoming to us, especially with the baby, really going out of their way to look after us, especially because my mother-in-law was here for like 3 weeks, so we didn't need the ward assistance, but they've insisted on coming in after the fact, and they're very...
Jeff's
very,
mother-in-law people.
They're very good to us. So in many ways, I feel guilty because I feel like I'm just kind of constantly taking from the ward, and I'm not. I don't feel like I'm putting much back in yet. I need to like feel like.
Well, what
I'm
do you have to give? You're a new father.
I don't
you have nothing.
I don't have anything to give. I have nothing to offer these people.
You're like the broke wise man, the wise man that came and was like, "Oh my gosh, I forgot a present, but can I still come hang out?"
I'm like Melchior's friend.
The open shot.
Who just has to leave. I walk alongside the camel, but I
Melky?
Don't get to run.
Is that a Perfect Strangers reference?
No, wasn't Melchior one of the wise men? You got Balthazar, Melchior, and the other guy.
Oh my gosh, I have no idea. I don't think that's real science.
Maybe you should learn more about Jesus.
Let me go to Luke. Nope, no Melky in there.
Perfect Strangers was
a great
show.
Let's check Matthew for a Balthazar.
Melchior is the name given in later legend to one of the biblical magi appearing in the Gospel of Matthew.
Malky? Who are the Perfect Strangers? I'm pretty sure you're referencing a Perfect Stranger.
I think
you're
thinking of Balky. Isn't that his name?
That might be it.
You mean Bronson Pinchot or whatever his name is?
It's a great show. You know what? Mad About You. Love that show. I'm sure. Trying to find it now. I've been watching Through News Radio again. You'll be proud of me. It's come back up in my repertoire where this is what my soul desires.
I'm so sorry.
It's brilliant. They have lines like, I was up at my pen factory in northern Wisconsin this afternoon. Oh, what do they do there? They make pens, Dave. They make pens. And we laugh and laugh. I mean, that's comedy gold.
Okay, I found when I got married, there were many things that I thought was great and wonderful, and then you realize your wife doesn't care. So how is
the
that?
The Replacements is a great example where she's like, was this funny because you were like a little kid? And I'm like, no, Keanu Reeves' greatest movie is The Replacements, and how dare you?
Yeah, stuff like that. It's fun. Marriage is fun, everyone. Embrace it if you haven't already. I mean, it's a choice after all, so come on. Singles wards don't need to exist. We all know that. Get it together, people.
I don't know.
Anyway, so Christmas season is upon us. Happy times all around. I want to embrace the ethos of our twin sisters who do their favorite things, because my favorite thing during the Christmas season that I've discovered so far is the Chick-fil-A peppermint chocolate chip milkshake that's seasonal.
Boo.
It's delightful. You need it in your life. You go get it when you're running errands. It just changes your whole day. Changes your whole disposition. Everyone gets happier. It puts you in a place that you didn't even think existed. All right?
You know what I like?
Nirvana.
From Chick-fil-A?
All the food.
The blended strawberry lemonade.
Also a great choice. Oh. Quality you can taste. I think that's a different company.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. So good.
I'm just saying, man.
My favorite thing, then, would be, I'm looking around here.
That 4K TV behind you. That's your favorite thing.
No.
Dang it.
I'd say probably chocolate oranges. I've been through two this year.
Okay, so you're pro chocolate.
Those trick you because they are not meant to be a one setting snack, and often they are. The other one that I love, Boom Chicka Pop chocolate drizzle popcorn. Oh my gosh, 120 calories, and there's like four servings in a bag. You can limit yourself to a fourth of that, and it is incredible. Go look at the Boom Chicka Pop and find the ones with actual chocolate drizzled all over, and that's your eat.
Okay, appropriate disclosures. Are you an investor of any kind? Everything okay?
No, I actually was going to email them to ask to invest in them, and turns out they were sold to like the Orville Redenbacher for $250 million earlier this year.
How does that email work? You just go find info@popcorncompany.com and just say,
oh, yeah,
hey.
And I say, hey, if you're doing a round or anything, I just want to sneak some money in. I really think your product's great. And then sometimes they'll let you in.
I've heard the what you should look into, Al, are wearables for animals.
Nope, don't care.
Been reading about this week. The market's supposed to triple within the next few years. Triple.
I'm in Bitcoin, all right? I am terrified of any market that claims to triple. That thing is a roller coaster of emotions every morning.
Bitcoin, I sit there and I'm like, man, what would it have been like if I bought 1,000 shares 8 years ago?
Were 38 cents a piece?
Where would I be
today? Paid 11 Bitcoin for a pizza?
I'd be like, honey, I'm cashing out. We now have $17 million. Congratulations.
Yeah, dude. It's insanity. Well, it's one of those things. It'll either go to zero and be absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Or it'll go to $1 million a coin. And I just have no idea. Like, I have no clue.
I'm pulling for the former because I view Bitcoin much like something like Beanie Babies. I view it like a weird trading fad that's just going to die.
Yeah, I know. That's fair. That's fair. It's good. It's good.
Talk to my sister about that. I think she still has a large cache of Beanie Babies somewhere at my mom's house.
Hey, that stock was rising. Yeah. It was going up.
They're
going
to come back.
I wouldn't be surprised if you have large caches of everything at your mom's house. No, that place is a hoarder's haven. Bless her heart. Barbara, all the way in China. You probably can't get this. We're for sure censored in China. We're too free with our speech.
Well, it's not as much that, but the very fact that the word Mormon is in our show title could actually flag censor stuff.
Big Brother's watching people.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's no religion officially in China.
All right. So Mormon-y things.
Oh, that.
We're heading to Christmassy Mormon. Oh, so we did favorite things. What else did they do that's cool?
What, for Christmas?
No, the twin sisters.
That's literally the only cool thing that they do.
Oh, ouch.
The rest of it's just talking about how like people puked in the temple open house, which was actually pretty amusing. Getting the down and dirty of a temple open house behind the scenes was pretty hilarious. Like finding out there's like kids puking in the celestial room.
No.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. That was pretty funny.
What do you do when a kid pukes in the celestial room?
You get him or her out of there and then you clean it up. One thing I learned, and this makes sense to me, you often hear that that the church replaces all the carpets in a temple after an open house. Yeah. I've heard this my whole life, right? But apparently it's not the case, which I guess makes sense. They're like, no, that's the same carpet. They just really, really clean it up after an open house and get it going again. Because replacing all of the carpet in a building would be a multi-hundred thousand dollar expenditure, I would assume.
No.
Yeah, for the kind of carpet they use. High pile, dude. High.
Oh, yeah, that's probably
high pile.
You're probably not talking the $270 a square foot. You're talking upwards of $4 or $5 maybe. Sculpted carpet?
Yeah, at least.
Costs money.
At least. Yeah. So that's, I don't know what else the twin sisters are doing. They're doing great things. They're killing it. Good job, girls in Idaho.
Way to go, ladies.
I honestly can't say whether they want me, whether I should go to Idaho or whether they make me want to stay away from Idaho. I'm not quite sure. Either way, I live in D.C.,
like
the center
of
power.
The angry Jeff on the inside.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Speaking of temples.
Hmm.
Like that segue? Yeah, I mean, we only have like four things, but
there's big stories and there's smaller stories. Like
you broke some news around the Mormon Church changing rules for temple baptism. So now
I did,
guys.
I
if you didn't know this, which of course you know it, but they changed the rules. So now if you're a priest and have the authority to baptize outside the temple, you can now baptize inside the temple.
Yeah. Well, effective January 1st.
So now this felt pretty ho hum.
This was big news though. This hit pretty hard.
It was big news. It was big news, and part of it was big news because they did not change really the role of sisters, and there was a clamoring for more. Like, hey, if you're going to give 16-year-old boys with the lesser priesthood some roles in here, can we get the sisters doing something besides holding towels and pulling zippers out?
And holding towels seemed to be the go-to,
a Romney binders of women sort of moment where, like, it's not a bad thing to hold a towel. That's kind of helpful, but now we're just towel shackers.
Well, okay, so you said they didn't change anything for the girls. The letter does say it says right there from the First Presidency that under the direction of the Temple Presidency, the girls ages 12 through 18 may assist with baptistry assignments currently performed by sister temple ordinance workers and volunteers.
So which are what?
Which, by my best guess from my experience, literally would be stuff like, what are they, running the desk? Maybe they go behind the desk and they pass out the clothes to people when they check in, the baptism clothes.
The laundry, they could run the laundry.
They could run the laundry. They could walk and fro. I'm not going to pretend always a hard discussion.
I mean, it felt kind of like a non-thing, but it's actually, I think it's riled a few feathers.
Well, for the girls especially, but for the young men, it's a big deal because it's, previously it's had to be endowed to recommend holding Melchizedek priesthood holders, right, to do any of this work. And now you can go to priests, which also raises the question, so if a priest can do it, what about a Melchizedek priesthood holder who is not endowed? I guess I would assume they could. Why not? Because they're a priest by the same logic. So, because before it wasn't just enough to be a Melchizedek priesthood holder, you had to be an endowed brother to do
this. I wonder how far, like, I wonder if we do have some sort of a moment in the future where, like, we go through and review all the callings and say why, you know, like, you've been a proponent of the Sunday school president needing to be a priesthood holder for a long time.
I still believe in that, yeah.
There's a lot of this stuff that it's like, even in the temple, you could pause and say, you know, who needs to be a priesthood holder, and who could just, like, who have we just put priesthood holders there to do it for, because of tradition's sake, right? Like a recorder, a temple recorder, maybe, or there's a lot of roles inside of that, or inside of the temple especially, that could be shared to women because they're not, like, doctrinally tied to priesthood holders. They're traditionally tied, culturally tied, but... And inside the church, we have a bunch of that as well, just in normal day-to-day operations. It'd be a cool moment if it was like, hey, we realize that, like, half this stuff is just because that's the way we've always done it, and it's not doctrinally based that it needs to be a priesthood holder, so they're all open. Would the brethren look at that as some sort of a slippery slope, you think, or is that something that that should be pretty trivial?
Al, I'm glad you asked, because I know the mind of M. Russell Ballard.
No, but you've thought about deeply this.
I don't know about the slippery slope thing. Obviously, from my perspective, I think, like you said, it's worth revisiting these sorts of things and then delineating appropriately between what is doctrinal and what is cultural. And I think we need to do that all the time in the church, even just with our daily associations with the church, because we can get frustrated by stuff and then forget that it's cultural and not doctrinal, right? And then it's just about changing culture. So, yeah, it'd be great to revisit that. Like you mentioned, Sunday school president. I've looked around in my own research and never found the sound doctrinal footing why Sunday school president has to be a man. Now, although I have my opinion on it, I'm not agitating, you know, for change or bitter about anything or whatever like that. But I think it'd be worth investigating. I think the temple's a cool jumping off point to start thinking about that for sure, especially because elsewhere in the temple, there are ordinances that priesthood ordinances that women officiate in the temple. And it's the only place where we do that. And I think that's a great place to start and really think about what we're doing. I mean, one thing I love about the temple, especially past the limited use scenario of the baptistry, is as you see a lot more of the parity, I feel like, between the genders. Sure, there are things that there's different things we do and things we covenant and all that stuff. But what I see is even greater equality. And I know that equality sometimes can be viewed
as equal yoking, if you will.
Equal yoking is even better, because of course it can be silly to say equality, because I don't believe that we're unequal. I do believe in that we have the notion that we have different roles and we're supportive of one another.
Men's work and women's work and Charlie work.
Yes. We're all working towards the greater good. But it does make you feel more equitable in the sense when you see how things shake out when you are engaged in the higher ordinances of the temple. So
there was another article that was talking about, there's sort of a quote that got spun around somebody talking about how in the old days in the temple, women used to be... They used to serve as, was it recorders or witnesses?
Yeah, I think all of those.
And the lady that quote was attributed to put out an article sort of explaining where she was coming from and some of that, saying, hey, this was done here in one temple. It wasn't like a doctrinal thing. But there is some historical precedence for some temple presidents doing that, letting women serve in some of that space. But that was an interesting read as well.
It really was, and I like that it clarified. And the blog where this was is a place where I think people can rally for these sorts of things, right? So I like that the actual blog owner is like, you know what, everybody, let's take a step back. What I've shared is anecdotal. I'm not saying this was church policy writ large.
Take a proverbial chill pill.
Yeah. But of course, it makes you think about it again. Like, why can't a woman record? What is there that is priesthood ordinancy about recording?
If we think about it logically, their handwriting is... traditionally always better.
Well, here's a problem, though. You let the girls do it, they don't teach handwriting anymore to the youth. So if you let them do this, they're going to wonder what they type on, right? So that is something to be concerned about.
Great point. You zinged a gender and a generation.
Uh-huh.
That's comedy.
I literally am going to have to send my children to penmanship courses because they no longer teach actual handwriting in school, which is just sad.
That's right. Neither should they.
Oh, they should. Why not? Beautiful penmanship. Who doesn't love it? Come on.
America? I don't know. Who cares?
Dang it, America. Get with it.
Makes me so sick. We got other temple news. You can stay with the theme. We can keep going here.
Sure. Other temple news. The Cedar City Temple was dedicated. That's Utah's 17th temple. And you'd think they'd be done, but then they've got the Saratoga Springs Temple that's going to be happening at some point. So...
jeez.
Good old number 17. This happened over the weekend of Sunday, December 10th. And there they go, Cedar City. It's funny because I look at the architecture of it and I think it's perfectly nice, but they've really leaned on this being a pioneer-inspired temple. And
because the wheels.
And all the singing while they walk up to the grounds. I mean, yeah, I get it. The cupola is a bit different.
Oh, my gosh. Henry B. Eyring is such a happy guy. Look at him in those photos.
I do love President Eyring. I think President Eyring embodies joy just so well. I just love that about him.
Also, you'll never see him with his mouth closed. It's always an open mouth smile.
Yeah, that's how he rolls.
Oh, that's great. That's nice.
So that happened. Congrats, Cedar City.
There's another article about we baptized Donald Trump's parents.
Or his grandparents.
You want to know why? Because they're dead. Case closed, people. This isn't a controversy. We baptize all the dead people.
Should we troll Donald Trump and just be like, what are you going to do now, man? Your parents are Mormon.
Man,
I don't think that's going to work out for us.
I just don't think it works that way.
Yeah,
but sure, not. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think he'll
listen. If he reads your tweets, Jeff, I think that's a great way to get under his skin. Threaten him with salvation.
I've read a lot about, because if you ever look at Twitter and his tweets, there's massive groups of people who just barrage him with responses. And I guess that's the key to getting above the fray and getting the retweets. It's this whole science of people who basically spend their time getting noticed from Donald Trump's tweets. That's a way to spend time.
And do they do it? Does he notice them? Notice me, senpai.
I have no doubt that he's formulating policy based on these very exchanges. Of course. Why not?
It's like, well, at Lone Wolf 44 sure liked the tax bill, so I'm going for it.
Yeah. Anyway, it's funny people are up in arms about the, it's just a misunderstanding of what we do in the temple. But you did say, Al, they're dead. There are times when we hold off. I believe the rule is you're only supposed to do it if they're kin, for one. So presumably someone in Donald Trump's line, if this is all above board, is LDS and did the work and is somehow related to his parents. and grandparents.
I think that's safe to say.
Or we could be looking at a, you know, founding fathers situation where we just do it because someone's got to do it.
They found the fathers.
I mean, I wonder how many times George Washington's actually been baptized in the temple.
I wish I had been baptized that many times in the temple. You know? Anyway.
Okay. All right. I got nothing. No. Well, no one's going to top that. Speaking of Mr. Drumpf, though, by the way, quick note here. Many of you might be aware that the United States will be recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Now, while this is not a new
policy.
It's not a new policy.
Finally,
per se.
Jeff, say it.
Okay. Finally. This has been in the works for 20 years of people always saying we want to do this. The government position has always been we intend to move our embassy there and recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, but it has to be done through negotiation with the Palestinians and we resolve everything together. And once all that's resolved,
Trump was just like, I'm doing it. Watch out.
Ish. I mean, there's more to it than that. Even Trump said this is still an issue that needs to be sorted out between the parties involved, but whatever. So as part of the unrest that has resulted from this announcement throughout the Islamic world, now BYU students at the Jerusalem Center are facing restricted travel opportunities. They're just kind of stuck hanging out.
They get restricted often. Anytime there's terror activity over there, anytime really any foreign policy moves, they restrict that travel, and so this is a common theme for them. They know this drill well, but they got a cool campus, so they got cool stuff to hang out with.
I hope so. I mean, yeah. So they're just hanging out. That's what you're like. Hey, I was going to go to Petra this weekend. Nope, it's not happening. No,
no, but they can go through some of the old city still. They just walk across the valley there.
So, Al, you've been over there, and I don't know.
Sure,
if you know
sure,
how,
sure.
I don't know if
I
you
go
know
there
how
often. Once a decade.
Sure, right. Now, I believe the Jerusalem Center is actually in East Jerusalem, right?
I don't remember east and west. It's up on the by the Mount of Olives.
I mean, I know it's on the east side, but I believe it's in what would technically or internationally be regarded as east, i.e., occupied East Jerusalem. Like,
yeah, I felt like it, man. That place gets shady.
So that's very interesting. It's by the Mount of Olives, but that's interesting. The church wound up building it there.
It's outside of the walls. You know what I'm saying?
I know what
you're saying. It's hard to build inside the walls.
Well, I don't think you want to do that. Oh, but while we're talking about Jerusalem.
Yes?
I want to give LDS Living some real love here, folks. LDS Living published an article.
Perfectly. Did they make a mistake? Are you going to zing them?
Oh, it's a perfectly fine article. The article is called What Judaism Taught Me About Following This Powerful Charge from the Book of Mormon. And the poll image, or the thumbnail that goes along with it, is the Dome of the Rock. Now, while...
That's in Jerusalem.
Now, while the entire Temple
representing
Mount...
Representing Judaism.
No, the Temple Mount is contested territory between many, many faiths, right?
Sure,
between
sure,
Judaism,
sure.
Christianity, and Islam.
You're saying they should have used the wall, maybe.
But the Dome of the Rock is an Islamic holy site celebrating Muhammad's night flight. It's regarded as a place where Muhammad stood and took off, essentially. It's just a mess up, but it's like the classic thing that happens in publications like
LDS
Living.
Hey, when you got people that haven't lived over there like, you know, me, then they wouldn't know, right? I mean,
there's even a crescent on top of the building.
Yeah, look at the architecture. They're the BuzzFeed of Mormondom. They're just spinning out articles.
Just look at the architecture of the building. You can tell it's not a Jewish build. Anyway, LDS Living, I razzed you, folks. Let's get it together, LDS.
You know who else deserves a zinging? Jana Reese, that curmudgeon. She hates the new curriculum because she thinks that if we talk about conference talks, then nobody is comfortable disagreeing with a conference talk anymore.
Is that her actual thesis?
What the garbage are you talking about, Jana Reese?
That's her thesis.
I walk out of general conference and I say I agree with about 40% of what was just said in there. Ponderize? Are you kidding me? We're fine moving on from Ponderize.
Ponderize was a good day.
There is nothing about her argument that is valid. Jana, come back to the place where you can be both cheerful and supportive and a positive and have meaningful critiques instead of she's clickbait now. She's just, she, I don't know what she is a fan of. Not the curriculum.
She
not
says
anything.
There, she says there are some positive developments in her article.
Bull butter.
But so it's funny that you say you really locked in on the whole, you know, we can't criticize church leaders, which is interesting. I think the change is good, but I've seen a lot of other people fear that it creates kind of an echo chamber where if we're teaching from nothing but conference talks, we're quoting our own church leaders, speaking well of church leaders.
Well, don't teach crappy. Like, you take the theme that they taught
on. That's
what I hope. You introduce some quotes. You go find your own supporting literature. Like, we don't need to just read back the talks.
Yeah. Well, the sad thing is many will, but I hope they can work around that. And that's why where I think there's a good opportunity with this new curriculum. In that, when you're on the teachings of the presidents of the church, those are fine, but it's just lessons that kind of pull from some notes about different topics. Conference, I think it's a bit more of an open playing field, and it's at the discretion of your priesthood or Relief Society leadership. It could be a conference talk on any topic, and you could really go into a lot of interesting places.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
And I think oftentimes there's conference talks that deal with things that we don't ever get from the teachings of the presidents of the church manual. Like, there aren't really lessons on like adversity or despair or things along those lines where you could build an entire lesson about that based on a conference talk. So there's definitely a positive element here to be embraced, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So it does make me worry that we're getting away from the scriptures, though. That's my main fear.
That we're getting what?
That we're getting away from the scriptures. Like, if everything is just like, hey, read conference on your own time. Here's things about conference. I am all for embracing the living prophets and leaders, but I also like the doctrinal element of spending the time to know our scriptures and be in the scriptures.
Did you have that for the last 16 years?
No, not as much. And look, we suffer for it. This is
look at us now.
Lest you forget, Al, you are the author of a piece on our site that's called Why Third Hour is the Worst Hour of Every Week.
It is.
See? And that's part of it. I mean, I know gospel doctrine should satisfy that a bit more compared to priesthood.
And what did they do before the teachings of the presidents? Do you remember? I was a wee child.
I literally do not. It's been 20 years. So I didn't even go.
If there's anybody older than we are, we're 17 and a half each. Tell us, what was it like in the olden days when you'd come to church? Do they teach out of the scriptures more? Were the priesthood lessons more involved and thought out? Are we worse off now than we were 20 years ago? Answer us, please.
I would love to know. So hopefully it'll be better. I'm curious to see how the first Sunday of the month is going to go when they actually want us to sort of gather together and talk about local needs. So instead of lessons, will we actually have like strategy sessions as a quorum?
We could replace one ward council meeting.
That could be it's a good idea to replace most ward council meetings with nothing.
Hey-o.
With just time not in ward council, in my opinion. You know, send some emails, get it done.
Well, ward council, when it's working properly, is like, what are the local needs and how can we address them?
When you're counseling with your councils, you know what you're doing, folks. Things get better.
Amen.
Well, Al loves Jana Reese, everybody. He really...
I don't care for her.
He really just wants her to just do everything. So here's a story that I enjoyed and Al did not, about Ron Gunnell, who is the Mormon
Tabernacle... Who's this stupid guy?
He's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir's... So he's described as their top diplomat by the Salt Lake Tribune. So he's a member of MOTAB who has sort of become the everything for courting guests to be with the choir and taking
such
care
a stupid,
of them.
Story. Why would you write about this? Why more so would you pick this out to talk about?
Because it actually interests
This is the
me.
Schmoozer of MOTAB.
He's not just a schmoozer. So the Tabernacle Choir just did their Christmas concerts, right? And they had a Hugh McDonald. They had the guy
Ronald.
From Downton Abbey there, whose name I'm blanking on right now. But and Paddington, by the way, great movie. Go see its sequel. Hugh Bonneville, thank you. So Hugh Bonneville's there, and this actually talks about the experience of getting Hugh Bonneville, which was pretty interesting, because it's like straight up, he bumps into the guy in the airport and just says, look, man, you got to do this. You got to come be a part of what we're doing here. And he makes it happen. Ron Gunnell cannot be stopped, Al. Ron Gunnell is every man. He believes in the future. He believes in what the choir is doing, and he is getting in there, and he is making friends and relationships. He takes care of these people. He meets them at the airport.
No, you know what he's doing is he's doing his freaking job. We're writing an article about a guy who gets a paycheck, and he gets his paycheck because he did what he was supposed to. Good work, man. Can we write an article for all the people out there doing laundry? We write an article for all the people that are showing up to mop the floors. How about they are probably more capable at their job than what's a face here.
You really don't like Ron Gunnell, Al. I think he's
unremarkable in every way.
Look at him. He's a beautiful human. Look at
if
him.
If I saw that man in the airport, I would never think of him again.
If he talked
to me and said, we have to get you on the show, I'd be like, I don't even remember who you are.
We should get him on TWIM. Let's let him defend himself.
Next week on Shark Tank of Mormons.
I wish we like having guests on. It would be pretty funny if we had one that Al just vehemently loathed.
We've had them before. They're normally in the form of producers of crappy movies.
But I would love to see you just go at it with the understanding going in, like, I don't like you, and I'm going to call you out on your stuff this entire interview. It's the Thunderdome.
Do people come into interviews like that?
They might if, you know, any press is good press, right? If we help them sell a book. Who cares?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I say Ron Gunnell is everything. I'm very sad that Al does not appreciate all the fine work Ron is doing to help.
He's not doing fine work. He's schmoozing. It's called salesmanship. Let's see. What other crappy articles are in here?
Element of personal assistance.
You know what? I wanted to talk about this. There's been a little bit of hubbub.
Merry Christmas from Al right now. what other crap do we have? Who's this loser? You're all getting coal in your stocking, children. Santa's not even real.
You hear about the Mormon guy who went down to hook it up with some chick in Venezuela? He's in jail now.
I feel like I shouldn't laugh about this, but yeah, I've heard about it.
Well, one, it'd be a bummer if you get thrown in a Venezuelan jail.
It's probably not the best jail.
He's down there to marry the woman he met from English tutoring, which also is great. And he's just like a portly, blonde-haired Mormon fella, you know, some farmer from Idaho that, you know, I guess let me learn Spanish on the internet is sort of the Mormons only for Venezuela or the farmers only, and he cruised down there and hooked it up with this, or was like courting this girl, I'm sure, all on the up and up. And then they go to jail. And they're both in jail. The girlfriend, or are they married now? Is it fiance, wife?
I don't even know what they are.
I don't believe that this relationship is going to make it through this one. I think you put them in jail. I say, you know what? Take the girl. I didn't know her. I've never seen this woman before in my life.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about trumped up charges, presumably. He was arrested for allegedly stockpiling weapons.
Stockpiling, right?
This guy seems like a weapons stockpiler. Lord of War, right there.
Could you imagine getting that charge? Like, my mouth is agape when I get pulled over and they try and tell me that my plates are expired or something. And I'm like, how dare you? It is within the grace period, sir. Like, you come to me and you say you're stockpiling weapons, and I'd be like, I do not agree with you.
I got pulled over on the way to work a couple of years ago for expired tags. It completely slipped my mind to renew my registration. We're talking, this was like 5 months post-haste.
Oh, geez.
And at least I did not take your approach and be combative with the officer. I just said, holy heck, I actually really thought I did that, and I didn't. I'll take care of it today. And the officer was chill. He gave me his personal email and said, if you do it today, send me the info and I'll just nullify the court date. And I said, thank you. Because my mind was a blur. I think this is when I just had a kid.
I got pulled over last night for this. It's a 2-year registration here. You pay $50.
Hold on. I thought you owned the town. How are people pulling you over?
Yeah. So I get pulled over.
Come on.
And the cop, I was like driving down the street to my buddy's house at 10 o'clock. Pulls me over and he's like, I got to give you a ticket. It's $60. And I was like, so I had like a 30-minute lecture where I was like, well, you will listen to me because you have pitted us against each other as citizens. You are called to protect and serve, and you are not building rapport with the good citizens of this community when you're seeking to penalize us instead of to help us live in accordance to God. And he shook my hand at the end and said, I've never had a conversation on the side of the road like this, and I really appreciate you saying these things and giving me some real things to think about. And so then
I call BS. This story's not true.
That is like exactly what happened.
This is up there with the story my dad has told me my whole life. That I kid you not, he says one time he went to like McDonald's or something, and there was a guy in a wheelchair who was all like bitter and angry and being rude to everybody there. And my dad, according to my dad, looked at him and was like, hey man, let's settle it down. He talked down the angry wheelchair man, but he wouldn't do it. So my father grabbed the wheelchair and wheeled him out of the McDonald's into the street and went about his way. My dad has been telling me this story my whole life, and now I'm like, Dad, that story is just not true.
My story, I actually have witnesses because I was pulled over in front of my buddy's house. And I sat out there for 30 minutes giving this guy my whole thing, trying desperately to talk my way out of this ticket. Didn't work.
Are there points involved too? Or is it, or
no
is it,
points. I just went and paid $60 and went on our way. But
that's life. I know you're a tough negotiator. I'll never forget the hotel in Miami.
Hey, we got our free shuttle that we were promised.
That was the perfect example of just whittling down their will to live. It's like 2 hours at the counter. I can stay here all day. I've got all day to just sit here and
we're
just block
in some
all your
crappy attention. Part of Miami. Guess who's not paying for the taxi to the dock? This guy.
Yeah, that was a good time. So yeah, Venezuela. It's a mess. Don't go there anymore.
Yeah, don't go down there. Even for women, it's a trick. They're just trying to imprison you and send around things. Well, he's actually legit sick in prison. He's having a hard time. He's having a little Count of Monte Cristo moment down there. And if you know any people...
Is that what it is? It's Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, it is good. It's good.
That's
it's good.
That's the parallel.
He's in there. He's in a bad prison. It's pretty hard. Maybe the Man of the Iron Mask. I don't know. One of those.
I'd say we go for that one. That's a much better choice. DiCaprio shall be neither seen nor heard.
But I suspect he'll come out of there with a plan of revenge to extract from each of his enemies.
Oh, sure. If anybody can take down that state government
No,
body.
So the story I want to talk about, though, is this idea, the kids being interviewed by their bishops.
Oh, right? Yes. This has been a thing.
So Kurt over at Leading LDS had a thing about it recently where he's like, it was actually really helpful. He said before he'd interview any of his youth, he would actually bring the parents in and say, you know, how are you teaching your kids about the law of chastity? How can I help? What should I be doing? But just kind of give them this heads up that you're coming in here, and you can ask them what would be appropriate. Is there anything that I can help with? But like, really, mm-hmm. he's supporting them teaching their kids about the law of chastity, and not trying to explaining to them and teaching them that it's not the church that's going to do that.
Yeah,
which is cool. But there's also a big movement of people that are like, how can you believe that a grown man asks a little boy or a little girl what their sexual activity is? You've heard this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard plenty of this. Yeah.
Where do you land on this issue, Jeff?
I'm mixed. For one, Kurt's a very thoughtful guy.
Kurt. Yeah.
That's a good insight. That's a great approach if you're ever in that position. Just straight up talk to the parents about what they expect from those interactions. So this is multifaceted. Now, my understanding, when you're in a position like that as a leadership, of course you want to ask if one is obeying the law of chastity. Sometime that might have to involve specifics, but I've seen much anecdotal evidence, at least, of people arguing that they've had bishops who are just too nosy and too specific about individual acts or things when just talking to kids about the law of chastity. Not in a situation where, like, if a kid comes in to repent of something And then it gets more specific, which is understandable. Just in like asking them if they are being worthy and just getting into nitty gritty of whatever they may or may not be doing, as opposed to say just asking them, do you keep the law of chastity?
Well, but you, I mean, as a kid, so my two things on this are, one, the bishop is sitting there in place of the Lord, right? Like,
yes.
Like the idea that if it makes you uncomfortable, that's not, you know, it's like, well, we shouldn't have these interviews because it feels weird. And it's like, well, if you're sitting with Jesus there, it's going to feel weird too, man. And so like the awkwardness, I don't think is a sort of this like, all right, drop everything. We shouldn't do this because it feels a little weird. Like it's actually, you're supposed to feel uncomfortable and a little, you know, guilt is supposed to come into this thing. Yeah. And help you make better choices.
Not guilt though, godly sorrow.
Well, in the end, guilt is a motivator in the beginning.
All right.
So the other piece of it though is this place where, as a kid, I don't know if all kids were this way, but like in my head, I was actually, you know, I was pretty happy not confessing any sins and going in there and like I would answer to the technical truth of whatever question was in there. And so a bishop that's like, all right, hold on, you know what this means, and that means this, 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 and this. Are you doing any of those? And it's like, oh, you got me. Right? Like I feel like this idea that you know, you can just like the I'm so grateful for like my time as a youth where I had bishops that like cared and explained and bothered to press a little bit more, because it's like when you're feeling guilty and like carrying this stuff with you, it's so relieving to get it off your chest and talk to somebody about it.
Sure, of course.
And so like how do you mirror or how do you match that sort of need, desire, and reprieve up with the fact that like you also are sort of you have self-preservation at heart, and as a kid you're trying to avoid any hard conversation and not talk to anybody about anything. Like you're barely talking to your parents, let alone a bishop. So like, where's this idea that we should just be, you know, tiptoe around stuff and never ask hard questions of a kid?
Yeah, I get that for sure. Like I said, I mean, I'm mixed on this. I don't have kids who are getting into this, but this is twofold though. It's one, whether they should be asking the questions at all, and the other thing is whether they should be doing it alone with the kids. That's the
would,
other
would issue. Would you have had conversations with your bishop if your mom or your dad was sitting in there with
and,
you?
And that's the tough thing, probably not. But it doesn't have to be mom or dad. Would you have done it if like a trusted advisor was there with you? If your old buddy, brother, whoever was alongside,
and what's an interesting dynamic, right? I have this memory of like me sitting with my bishop or with a counselor, and a one-on-one conversation is much different than two of them versus one of me, right?
Oh, of course.
I would actually feel 100%. Much more piled on and harassed by there being two on the other side instead of one.
Well, not only that. I mean, I look back on my life and I'm thankful for some of the sort of spiritual intimacy you can develop with a bishop when it's just one-on-one and you're talking about life and praying together and working through things. And I do agree, it's hard to replicate that.
Now, when you get a crappy bishop, like it ruins everything, right? But like,
yes.
I'm curious as a parent, how that, you know, I think if a bishop came to me sort of the way that Kurt described in his article of like, hey, here's where I'm going. Here's what's going on. You know, like, anything you want me to steer clear of? Are you comfortable with me talking? Like, if you guys would like to talk to your kids about, you know, chastity and the law of chastity and stuff, I'll keep it right at that level and just say, are you keeping the law of chastity as defined by, like, X, Y, and Z? And, like, I can stay right there. We don't need to go any deeper. In fact, we can pause if that's the case, and, like, I can come and counsel with you. But the bishop also has this sort of fiduciary duty to keep your conversations private, right? Like, I was glad that he didn't run. And man, I don't know. This is actually a hard one for me, because I don't think the answer is don't let bishops talk to kids.
No, that can't be the answer. Because then we look at some of this. This is again anecdotal, but one talking about how one woman says she was asked about masturbation every year that she had her bishop's interview. And when she was, So even worse, as an adult, his daughter was asked this question as a 12-year-old about masturbation. A 12-year-old didn't even know what it meant, and her friends didn't know what it meant. So she started searching for it on the internet. And so then that, I think this involves parents educating kids, but it gets really risky because once they're 12, often is the case, then that's like free reign. Okay, you are now part of the circle of annual interviews or whatever with the bishop, right? And if as a parent, you are not teaching your kids at that age about those things, this is where it should be like what Kurt was talking about, where you're more involved. Because otherwise, you're essentially leaving it to ecclesiastical leaders. They're filling in even if you don't want them to. And you should have the right as a parent. If you're saying like, no, I'm going to talk to my kids more about birds and bees stuff when they're 13 or 14 if you're crazy, but whatever. Like you don't want to put yourself in a situation where if the bishop brings something up and you kid doesn't have any idea what that is, that all of a sudden it piques curiosity. Right. I mean, we've semi joked in the past about like, is all the talk in the church about porn making people look up porn that they hadn't even been thinking about it before? You know, the youth are hearing all about this crazy porn everyone's prohibiting. It's like the Footloose town. Well,
clearly that's not. I mean, like if it wasn't a bishop that said it, there's going to be some comment at school that says it and you're going to end up. I mean, if you're curious about it because no one has explained to you what it is. And you go and look it up, right? Like you're going to go and find it somewhere. And so, like, sort of pinning that on a bishop, I think is as dumb as pinning it on like the public school system.
Well, I don't mean pin it on the bishop. I just want to meaning that if you don't communicate parents to bishops, then those situations could arise, and you might not want them to.
Yeah.
And then it gets thorny. And that's because the bishop's doing his thing the best way.
And the harsh reality of it is like I'm sure there's a lot of parents that think that their kid has no idea what masturbation is or pornography is. And, you know, a bishop may be able to have a much more candid conversation about like the realities of it and the, you know, the dangers of pornography and all that stuff where a parent still is oblivious to what their kid is doing.
Here's one thing where I do think there's a fair criticism in that bishops are called upon to engage in various forms of counseling, right? Bishops are judges in Israel, and they can help with the repentance process. But of course, they're regular men thrust into this role. And I know that the church has worked harder in the past number of years to get bishops involved in groups that do counselor training. But I think that's one area where it's not as controversial, where obviously a bishop is not a licensed clinical social worker or a therapist or anything like that trained in that capacity. But I do think we can and should do more for our bishops to prepare them in that way. Now, obviously, you can rely on the Spirit and it can guide you places. And that's worked for the past, you know, nearly 200 years in the restored church for the most part.
From time to time, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's a strong area where we can make the bishop's role as a confidant.
You know, it would be amazing, man. What if the bishop had like there was a sort of a calling or a role in the ward that was a counselor, and as things
be cool,
you know, as things bridge beyond the like repentance and sort of seeking forgiveness, that sort of role that's there. The bishop like readily employs the services of the counselor or somebody that's like trained in that stuff that can jump in and sort of help with some of the psychological piece of it. Now, as a kid, man, I don't know, dude, you're just a horny teenager, right? Like,
so true.
I think the idea that like we should ban those conversations completely is so short-sighted. Yeah. And the crappy thing is there's plenty of bad examples out there that say no bishop should ever talk to anyone. And so how do you build a sustainable model inside of that without like ruining any more kids' lives by, you know, like literally if you go too far as a bishop, if you ask too penetrating of a question. Not to use penetrating where we shouldn't be using penetrating. If you ask that question, like it actually is. I mean, it's this very sort of jarring, scary, terrible time. But like, if you can go in there and ask in a supportive, sort of like not invasive way, and but I mean, like, The dumb thing is, like, you'll have a kid that'll come in that thinks that they, you know, they've joined the sex worker trade when they had their first experience with masturbation. And it's like a bishop needs to ask enough that he can say, okay, so we're dealing with this. That's different. Here's how we deal with it.
Yeah, I get it.
Still hard.
Thorny issues all around. Some quick mentions for all of you. Nice little article here over at Ask Angela from the Deseret News that says, basically, I'm not a practicing Mormon anymore, but my roommate still is. And how do you navigate that? Okay, taking aside the whole let's bring them back notion, which is important. It's a fair, you know, I don't deal with this anymore, but I think many of you listening have had roommates who have fallen away while your roommates, or maybe on the flip side, you are the one who struggled. Who knows? But I don't think this is a bad thing to visit and talk about and figure out the way to find a good balance. And you could take a broader brush.
Are you being paid for this sponsor?
Yes. This Week in Mormons brought to you by Ask Angela.
No, it's interesting because it's from the perspective of the guy that like is leaving the church and trying not to be a schmuck.
Yeah, exactly. He's trying to be cool about it. Also, missionaries are back in Puerto Rico, yo.
Booyah.
They had to leave.
Jeff, this year in review, any goals for the new year, any resolutions, anything remarkable this year that you care to reflect on?
Well, let's see. One thing I'm very proud of, Al said we were going to barely do shows, but we've still, with the Twin Sisters' help and other things, managed to pull off like 26 or 27 episodes out of a 52-week year. Not too bad. Not too bad.
You kind of weaseled that in. I realized when we were trying to do the show this week that I was like, you put me on a schedule again. We're not just hopping on every now and again.
Haha.
You got me.
I'm unstoppable. I am invincible, as they say in GoldenEye.
You had a big year. You got a new kid.
Yeah, I mean,
that's, you moved.
We moved to the suburbs now. We have another kid. So it's been 2017's been a pretty good year on the personal front. There's other things that have been terrible, but this is not a political show, so I'll
besides Trump.
So I won't say anything there. But it's been a good year overall. So 2018, I'm just looking forward to settling in more, and I'm excited. It's fun when you have a second kid, because you forget so much stuff as you've watched the first kid grow up, and it's just going to be fun watching the second kid start covering all that territory that my first son did before, you know, just getting his personality and you know, finding himself a little bit. So that'll be a lot of fun. That'll be a good part of 2018. The other big question
fatherhood
is,
suits you well, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. And beyond that, I'm excited that I'll finally have a new calling and just serving in the kingdom, getting the good stuff.
For sure, it's Elder's Corn President, 100%.
You know, and on the rest of it, maybe I might try to get into recording music again. It's been a while since I've done that.
French films like with foreign trains?
I don't do that one anymore. I just go by myself now. That's my name.
Whoa. Okay.
But all I right. spell it. But I spell Jeff with a J for no reason, just to do it.
Well, let me be the rhythm guitar on this outfit.
No, I want your harmonica playing, dude. I know how good
that
is.
Oh my gosh, I kill it on that.
What about you? What about you? How's your
career? This is kind of a monumental year for me. Marriage, kid on the way.
Yes.
Bought a house. I'm like a full grown up now. Quite a remarkable shift. It's funny. We did the Light the World. We're doing like the Light the World.
Oh yeah, we
post
should tell
today.
People about that in case they don't know what we've been doing.
And so I got to do one just today actually, where we, you know, you sort of reflect a little bit on what you're doing, where you're at. It's insane to me that a year ago, my life was just completely different, and it's sort of a testament to. I feel like the atonement and faith for a lot of it, just that, you know, you're going through and like when you're trying to plan it out in your own head, there's just no way that it's ever going to get better, no way that you can ever get out of it. But the Lord has a way about him of turning things around rapidly when it's time. And for me, that was as a 34-year-old single desperate man.
Hey, dude. I met your wife when you'd only been dating for, 5 or 6 weeks? We could tell then. We could
tell.
Yeah. Danielle and I walked away and we're like, yeah, he's definitely got a different vibe about her. He seems pretty pretty smitten without reservations is the way I would describe it.
Oh, well. And still now.
So, and
I smite. I hope with so. No reservation.
I hope so. The way you talk about it, I can't quite put a finger on how supportive of a husband you are to a pregnant woman, but I think you're doing okay.
I'm learning lessons as we go.
Not quite sure. Al mentioned the Light the World stuff. The Light the World initiative has been really, really cool. I love the vending machines they set up. You know, you can buy a goat to give to someone in a developing country who needs one. But what we've been doing since December 1st is, through our great network of contributors, publishing a blog post that corresponds to the daily scripture and thought that you can find at mormon.org that's part of Light the World. And that's been kind of fun, actually. I've gotten a big kick out of seeing all of our different writers bring their thoughts and perspectives to all these different topics. And it's given us a cool corpus of stuff. And so that'll still be going on. It goes on until Christmas Day will be the last one. So we've only got about, what, five more of them, I guess. But anyway, check that out at thisweekinmormons.com if you want to see or look at the past ones. I've actually enjoyed that quite a bit. It's been a bit of an undertaking getting them all together and getting everything published, but it's been pretty cool.
Yeah,
getting
yeah.
everybody involved. So
good work,
my hat
team.
Goes off to any of our writers who have been a part of that. You guys have been awesome. I'm publicly lauding you for your great work. Likewise, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, maybe
email us
sometimes.
Contact at This Week in Mormons. We'd love to hear from you. Tell us what we used before the temple or the priesthood manuals.
Oh yeah, we'd like to know about that. Also, patreon.com/thisweekinmormons if you want to pledge, support the whatever this is, the show, the blog.
We're at $5. We are at $5.
No, we're doing better.
Oh good. Thank you everybody.
Except for Patreon almost screwed everything up the other week. I don't know if you saw that, but that's a whole other story. Anywho, everyone right. thank you for
Merry
taking the
Christmas.
Time to listen. And the merriest of Christmases to all of you guys. We'll see you in 2018. And any final words, Al, before the year is out?
No.
Okay. Then my final words to you will be well, be holy, be happy, and drink eggnog. Twim is out.
Oh, my friends, I've begun to worry right where I should be grateful, I should be satisfied. Oh, my heart, I would clap and dance in place with my friends I have so much pleasure to embrace. But my heart is returned to Sister Winter. But my heart is gone.